I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. There is a lot, and I mean a lot, to keep track of in politics right now at both the national and state levels. There are still a lot of Democrats running for the presidency. Current Secretary of State Mike Pompeo might run for the U.S. Senate in Kansas, and the Missouri State Auditor is running for governor. Today, a political panel looks at these races and more as we head into the much-anticipated 2020 presidential election year. Then, he's reviewed music for KCUR and The Star for years, which means being out three or four nights a week. We'll learn how Bill Brownlee measures a good concert and which of the many performances he's seen were most memorable. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. It's not like there's much happening in the world of politics these days, right? The Democratic presidential race is roaring. The House appears poised to impeach President Trump. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo looks increasingly likely to return to Kansas to run for the U.S. Senate next year. In Missouri, Democrat Nicole Galloway appears determined to unseat Governor Mike Parson. But does she have a realistic shot? And Kansas City's new mayor, Quentin Lucas, is here, there, and everywhere, seemingly all the time. We're going to kick all this around with our stellar panel of political reporters this morning. With us, Caroline Sweeney just left the friendly confines of KCTV5, where she was a reporter. Caroline, nice to have you again. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks.
Eric Weston is a senior staff writer for The Call newspaper. Eric, good to have you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Mike Mahoney is a reporter for KMBC Channel 9. Michael.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
We're now about 2 months from the Iowa caucuses, Mike. Mayor Pete Buttigieg holds the lead in the most recent poll I've seen. New Hampshire's first-in-the-nation primary will follow a couple of weeks later. Senator Bernie Sanders appears to lead there, but it's Joe Biden who holds the lead in national polls. Where are we headed?
We're headed towards a protracted Democratic primary that, interestingly, may end up putting Missouri, a Super Tuesday state, in play in terms of deciding the nomination. And if it is still chaotic, perhaps Kansas, when they have their primary in May, that nobody thought that would happen. It's interesting that that Buttigieg is leading both in Iowa and coming on strong in New Hampshire. And Vice President Joe Biden, who is the leader in national polls, but not in Iowa and not in New Hampshire, is now in the middle of an eight-day swing going across the state of Iowa stumping.
Caroline, how do you see it?
Well, the crystal ball is really murky, like Michael was just talking about. We're 60 days away from that February 3rd Iowa caucus.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at Buttigieg's numbers, they are strong. But 60 days is a long time in politics. It may seem short to us kind of living every day to day. But there's a concern, especially in Buttigieg's camp, that he may be peaking way too soon. Joe Biden is calling this eight-day, 18-county tour of Iowa his no-malarkey tour. He's going to grip and grin
right
with as many caucus goers as he can to keep that strong lead he sees nationally reflected in Iowa.
You know, Eric, I just can't help but wonder, is the Democratic Party really going to nominate a mayor from a mid-sized Midwestern city? I mean, really?
I don't see it personally. And, you know, your question was, where are we headed? It kind of looks like, when you look at the Democratic Party and their nominees, it looks like we're headed for four more years of Trump's, because none of those candidates are exciting. You have some 70-something-year-old men, not that they couldn't do it, but it's much of the same old. You know, Bloomberg gets in and he's 77. He's got harassment, discrimination things that'll be following him all through the campaign. Elizabeth Warren sounds like Joe Biden someday. So I don't know where we're headed for
Mike,
this. Really.
You just heard Eric Weston predict that the president of the United States will be reelected come November 2020. What do you say to that?
Well, the past seems to indicate that unless there is a terrible, terrible situation with the economy, Eric may be right for that. The other thing to remember on this, having covered a number of Iowa caucuses, is that there's a saying from an old Iowa congressman out there that the secret to winning the caucus is to organize, organize, and get hot at the end. Mm-hmm. And we're not at the end yet. We're maybe in the seventh inning. And so what happens down the stretch? What the Des Moines Register decides to be their endorsement will carry a lot of weight. There'll be several more Iowa polls. There'll be an Iowa debate. All that will come down to the stretch. And when you look at the survey numbers in Iowa, it's still pretty fluid.
Yeah, Caroline.
I think one of the things you have to think about when you're looking at whether or not Buttigieg could be elected as a mayor of a midtown or a mid-sized city is that there's going to be a lot of questions with how he deals with international relations and a bicameral legislature. You know, as mayors, they really deal with mm-hmm. 6 or 9 other people sitting on city councils. But the idea that he can stretch himself and be able to right. talk in a bipartisan way is something that people will call into question.
You know, a lot of people think that the winner of the Democratic primaries will ultimately be president just simply because President Trump's poll numbers are so lousy, never being above 50%, I think, at any point in his presidency when it comes to job approval. But you don't seem to be buying it.
No, because remember now, he wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. But you had people in rural areas, you had people in Michigan that they polled that strongly being for and what we have is we have people that they talk to, but the people that they're not talking to are the ones that wind up in the polls. People were getting off their tractors, going to vote,
right.
and that swing and that shift is something that you can never predict anymore.
Who's the sleeper candidate in this race, Mike Mahoney? Who might rise up and surprise us all 2 months from now or even 3 months from now?
Amy Klobuchar.
I was going to say,
yeah,
that's my pick, too.
She is
the Minnesota senator.
Senator that has just been very steady in all this. And if the Biden campaign collapses, people are going to look for another centrist lane alternative. I don't know that Buttigieg is going to be it, although a lot of people are drawing a comparison between the dynamics of American politics right now and Pete Buttigieg and Jimmy Carter in 1976, mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. fact that after a very turbulent period, the Nixon years, Watergate, all of that, that Americans went to look for something much, much different. He certainly would be different. But let's see.
Who's your pick, Caroline?
I'm really interested in Andrew Yang. As I've been driving around Prairie Village, I've seen a lot of signs pop up. Yang, yeah, his
Andrew Yang signs
yes,
in Prairie Village?
Yes, his Yang Gang signs, because he's able to connect with some of the voters who are my age and maybe a little bit younger with his self-deprecating humor. You know, when I was out at the Iowa State Fair this year, his crowd was young and loud and supportive. I don't know how he's going to play nationally. I know that we've seen it's hard to tell with these
poll numbers.
He
doesn't wear a tie in those debates, Caroline.
That
could be an issue.
If you're a traditionalist, that tie is going to be a thing that you really turn to. But I find him interesting. He's shaking up the conversation in a way that's really accessible to a lot of people.
Who's your sleeper?
You know, it's hard to say. And I saw the Yang signs, too, when we were out out in that area. But I don't know if America's ready yet to elect a woman as president. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people said that when President Obama was elected, where we elect a black president. But I think they're all sleepers.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Given Have you watched some of them on the debate? I'm sitting there like trying to prop my eyes open with toothpaste.
Well, is the House going to vote to impeach the president by the end of the year, Michael? Is that where we're going here?
Within a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
The trial will probably be right after the new year. I don't know if McConnell is going to try to do it before the holiday or not. But yes, he will be impeached. It'll be on a partisan vote, and that will be very troublesome.
So no chance the Senate will convict, Caroline, or do you see it differently?
Oh, no, I think the Senate's really clearly divided, and with that heavy Republican presence there, I don't think they convict.
Are the people of Kansas City even paying attention to these impeachment hearings, Eric Wesson?
Our readers are calling in overwhelmingly excited about it. I think after the first week,
they're not.
They aren't. The first week, it was okay. Then the second, third, we're in the what, the seventh, tenth week of this conversation about it. And okay, where are we going with this? Let's have the vote. Let's do what we're going to do and move on.
We're talking politics this morning with our stellar political panel, Caroline Swinney, formerly of Channel 5, Eric Wesson from The Call, Michael Mahoney from KMBC Channel 9. In Kansas, the race to succeed Pat Roberts in the U.S. Senate appears to be still taking shape. President Trump came out the other day with a big statement that his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, would be a landslide winner in the state if he chooses to run. Is Mike Pompeo going to step down, Mike, as the nation's chief foreign policy officer to run for the opportunity to be one member in a 100-member deliberative body?
10 days ago, I would have said no. Today, I say yes.
How can you not say but yes?
Number one, it was the green light that he got from the President of the United States in that Fox interview a few days ago. And just today, tellingly, Secretary Pompeo went down to the University of Louisville and gave the McConnell lecture, and the president of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, introduced him, and they did not say one word, not one joke, not one quip about a possible Senate race, which tells me he's running.
No kidding. Interesting. How are you seeing it, Caroline?
Yeah, I agree with Michael. That endorsement came when the three of us were sitting for,
right,
for
right.
Casey Week in Review last week, and it surprised us all, except I do believe the president is right here, and I think the timing, at least for me and some of the sources I've been talking to, is going to be late January, early February is when we see that announcement come out. I know that when I was speaking with a source of mine, I mean, you don't have to really file until June, and
right.
He's got that name recognition and a massive war chest. He's got almost $1 million sitting in his campaign war chest, so he wouldn't need, there won't be any telltale signs that he is thinking about running until he really does it, because he's not going to need to talk to donors. You're going to look for organizing down in the Wichita area, but other than that, I think if you're not paying attention, which everyone should be, it may just kind of come at you all of a sudden, maybe at the end of January, beginning of February.
However, there are other people in this race.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Roger Marshall, the West Kansas Congressman Susan Wagles, Senate of the President Dave Lindstrom from Johnson County.
But Mike Pompeo's a slam dunk, isn't he, Mike, or not?
I don't think he's as much of a slam dunk as he would have been 3 or 4 months ago. But the point I wanted to raise was just this morning, Susan Wagle came out with an op-ed that said, number one, Barbara Boyer, the likely Democratic candidate, is just like Kathleen Sebelius and just like Laura Kelly. They are liberals disguised as moderates
right.
who are running. And the other line on that was that Kansas Republicans do not need another failed candidate for a statewide office. So it was kind of a 1-2 punch, one at Boyer for her credentials, and the other one implicitly at Kris Kobach, who you cannot discount in this race simply because of name ID, even though he ran a very poor campaign against Laura Kelly. And the other thing is that Roger Marshall is well financed on this thing, and money is the mother's milk of politics.
Well, has an impeachment tarnished Mike Pompeo to the point that he's going to wobble and waggle and then eventually falter here?
I don't think so. I think the firestorm around Mike Pompeo was, you know, at this point last week, maybe even several weeks ago. And the longer this impeachment hearing goes, the more muddled it becomes, the more names
right.
get thrown around. Mike Pompeo's name and role very well could get lost in this whole process.
But he was on the phone call, supposedly, when the
right.
president made the quid pro quo offer to the Ukrainian president.
He was on the phone call. But I think when you're thinking about what matters to Kansas voters, I don't know how high on the list that his role in that actually plays.
You're saying he's a national star, a national political celebrity, if you will, given mm-hmm. his name ID, and that'll carry him over the rough shoals of any impeachment drama
yeah.
that might.
Steve, I do want to say one thing quickly about what Mike was saying about Susan Wagle's op-ed. Her hits against Barbara Boyer should not surprise anyone. When Barbara
right.
switched
yeah.
parties, Susan Wagle came after her, took her off all of her committees, essentially pushed her out. And so I think that shouldn't surprise that shouldn't surprise anyone. And we are going to see a lot more of that coming from Susan Weigel because she is not the money leader right now. And she's really got to make her name statewide.
And I don't think that all of the role of Mike Pompeo in the Ukraine investigation is out yet.
And I don't think he's a slam dunk either, being a part of the Trump administration, because remember, Trump embraced Kobach. Brought him in to do the voter registration, saying there was fraud, there was no fraud. So I think just because he's riding on Trump's coattail, I don't think that's a slam dunk.
Well, not only that, Eric, remember, Kansas went for Rubio in the presidential primary.
Yeah.
So when there was another Republican option, Kansans did not go for President Trump. It was only until it was between Hillary Clinton and President Trump did Kansans say, as Republicans, we're going to vote for the Republican ticket.
But he's way above water in the state of Kansas, the president is. His approval ratings are strong.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's true.
Well, let's move to a more local topic here. Eric Wesson, we're 100 days and change into Mayor Quentin Lucas's term as mayor. What's the early read on him?
Nobody knows, because he's all over the place. He hadn't sat down long enough for you to really get a good grasp. He's gone from affordable housing to crime, which are two very important things, but where is he at? What is his agenda? I know when he was running, he gave us all in the media an agenda, but he's kind of looked like he's all over the place.
Well, I was going to say, hasn't job one for him been to solidify his stature as the city's mayor in the wake of, you know, a well-regarded, generally speaking, well-known incumbent like Sly James?
It was, and that might be it is, but most people that you talk to in the urban core is like, okay, so he's positioning himself to run for Congress. When Congressman Cleaver comes out, he's lining up with that recognition and visibility to do that. But again, okay, are we going to focus on affordable housing? We're going to focus. There are still some committee seats that he hadn't appointed yet. The 18th and Vine Economic Development Committee, there's been no appointments there. There's a lot of people will call in and say, well, we got pictures of him on Instagram and Facebook doing this, but get a picture of him at his office doing some work.
Mike?
You know, I disagree on that from the standpoint that affordable housing and public safety were both two of the top issues on his platform. His plans on gun restrictions in Kansas City, keeping them out of the hands of kids 17 and under, domestic abusers, people the subject of restraining orders.
Right.
All of those are probably going to be run as bills down at the Missouri legislature this year with the blessing of Mike Parson. He is got some traction there. This afternoon, the Tenant Bill of Rights will have a meeting and a committee hearing where it will probably be voted out and sent to the City Council, where that Tenant Bill of Rights will be probably approved or at least considered by the City Council on Thursday. So those are two areas where he's advanced things. On the other hand, Eric, I think you're exactly right. Steve and I were talking about this. It seems like it's been really difficult for Quentin Lucas to stop campaigning and start governing.
Caroline? Yeah.
I don't know. It's not a surprise. Politicians are always going to be looking for that next job, and that's part of it. You're going to want to be campaigning. You're going to want to show that you haven't stopped moving. But we all know that that's how politics works. You can't pick one thing, work it through the entire process, and then move on to the next. If you did that, a four-year term, you'd get maybe one or two things through. He's got to start hitting the ground running, which is exactly what he's done.
And behind the scenes, the council is kind of looking for where's the leader at in this. And if you can kind of talk to some of the people in the council, they don't have that kumbaya that they do publicly behind the scenes. I think right now him and Catherine might be having some friction, or Councilwoman Shields, about not being selected to be on the committee for the city manager. And then you got Councilwoman Melissa Robinson saying there's no black women in leadership positions anywhere on the council. So I think there are some leadership things that are going on behind the scenes that people aren't paying attention to.
And here's the other thing. Sometime this week, they are going to probably nominate a new acting city manager because Troy Shulter's last day is today. Wes Minder, I understand, is going to be the acting
city
manager. He is part of the city manager's staff now as assistant city manager and is very involved in transportation and roads, those sorts of things. And there may be some other turmoil at City Hall at the department level, whether or not the aviation director, Pat Klein, stays around is a question mark right now. Whether or not Public Works, Sherry McIntyre, stays is a question mark right now. Whether or not Terry Leeds stays at the water department. We're in for some interesting times at City Hall right now.
Leslie from Mission Hills is on the line. Leslie, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You all are deep in your news, deep in your jobs. Your job is to stay on the gerbil wheel without falling off, and the news cycles will leave you and close followers, you conscientious gerbils, exhausted. I get that. But those of us reading, watching, paying close attention to the crisis that is the small d democratic crisis that is unequivocally Trump's administration, I'm telling you, Pompeo has behaved less than honorably. Nobody is going to forget that. And I quibble with this idea that the longer impeachment goes on, the more exhausted people are. You guys are exhausted. We are dumbfounded and mortified and just watching, no way, he's not going to win in Kansas. Wiggle maybe, you know, we could have that whole argument, but I just had to say it. So thank
Leslie,
you.
I'm glad you called. Thank you. And, you know, her point is well taken for a third district of Kansas constituent. But, Mike, your point, I think, was across the state of Kansas that Trump's numbers remain very strong, above 50% in terms of job approval. And considering the state as a whole, it's a different picture, I think.
Yeah, it's a very red state. And then the other thing, since we're just into political junkiedom here, there is a news release out today that none other than the mass transit activist Clay Chastain is declaring this morning.
I was going to ask you. You just tweeted this.
That is declaring this morning that he's running for Congress against Emanuel Cleaver. So
here we go again. Yeah. Let's turn to the Jackson County assessment mess, Eric Weston, and what a mess this has been. I've lost track in a sense of where we are with this whole thing. Where are we?
I think we're still at square one because
time hasn't gotten us off square one.
No viable plan has been presented on what to do. It's been conversations about it, but nobody has said, okay. And I think people start getting their tax bills today, or if not Saturday, they start getting their tax bills and people are overwhelmed about there has been no change in them. So hopefully.
You mean they're surprised they're not as they haven't gone up as much as they thought they might?
No, they haven't gone down.
They haven't gone down.
And that's been some of the things that people have not gotten a clear understanding about. What is the Board of Equalization? What are they doing about this or anything? So I think we're still at square one.
Mike, go ahead.
Well, just to ratify Eric's point on there, these bills are hitting right now. Everything that anybody's seen in Jackson County in their mail from the county thus far has been an estimate. Some people have challenged them. Many people have challenged them either to the assessor's office or to the Board of Equalization. A lot more people are just realizing that they are getting hit with dramatic increases right now. Mm-hmm. It's about to hit the fan.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Do you see any solutions surfacing at this point, Caroline? Anything that's caught your eye that might get us out of this morass going forward?
I don't know. I think this is going to be swampy for a really long time. Mm-hmm. People are knee-deep in this. This is one of those processes where it's not easy to determine what needs to happen next. I know that they were bringing people in who wanted to contest, their estimate. The legislature had been hearing from people over the summer. But this is obviously going to be Troy Schulte's number one issue when he gets in there, is try to figure out what happens next.
And Troy Schulte is going to solve all the problems at Jackson County in the months to come. He's being hailed as the savior of Jackson County. Is he going to be?
It's really hard to pin the savior of Jackson County on one person. He's got a lot to do when it comes to repairing the relationship between the legislature and Frank White, and then the whole executive's office and the county. I don't know if I'm going to call this one guy the savior of Jackson County, but I think we need a set of fresh eyes, and he's going to be that set.
Eric Weston, you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's going to be able to do it even over the next year. because there's a lot of tension at the county. Caleb, which is the chief of staff that
Caleb Clifford.
White had kept him in there as a chief of staff, and he wasn't as politically savvy as he should have been, so it's created a division between us versus them kind of mentality there. Troy, I believe, will be good with the budget. His goal has got to be the assessments. Mm-hmm. And let me just throw this in, too. I live in Jackson County. My car personal property tax bill went up, too. Not only the real estate assessments, but personal property tax went up.
Well, I've seen the car you drive. It should have gone up, for the record.
I don't think the assessment will be his number one issue. I don't think the budget will be his number one issue. I go back to something that he told me a couple of weeks ago. I think my role here is going to be Switzerland. That's pretty much what he said, if it wasn't an exact quote. And what he means by that is that he is going to try to be the arbitrator between the Jackson County legislature and the county executive. That will be probably the first thing that he tries to do, is simply have both sides stop picking at the scabs and try not to argue with each other all the time. It may be difficult to do, but I think that's what he believes his first role, his first task is going to be, is to stop all the shouting and troublemaking. And that's going to be a big task.
That's got to include the assessments.
Absolutely. Yeah. But he's got to get them at least going in the same direction, and they're not.
We're going to leave it there, gentlemen. I told you they were a stellar panel, and they were. Eric Wesson, a senior staff writer for The Call, Michael Mahoney, reporter for KMBC Channel 9, and Caroline Sweeney, who's leaving the friendly confines of Kansas City, I think, in the days to come, formerly with KCTV 5. We're going to miss you. The best to you.
Guys, too. Thanks so much.
She's a good reporter.
Great job. Thanks so much. Happy holidays to all you guys. Thanks so much. Time for a short break. When we come back, we'll talk with a man who goes to more concerts in Kansas City than anybody else in the entire city. What's his life like? We're about to find out. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. My newsletter, Kraske Off Mic, comes out every Monday. You can get behind-the-scenes extras and my insights on news and current events delivered to your inbox. Sign up now at kcur.org/Kraske to get this week's edition. That's kcur.org/Kraske. Tomorrow, the full hours with Master of Wine Doug Frost and 12 good friends of Up to Date for a very special wine tasting. Join us for some great picks from Doug on Tuesday's Up to Date. Again, that's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, Bill Brownlee is one of those guys who just amazes me. A music writer for KCUR and the Star, Bill attends more concerts each year in Kansas City than anybody in town, or at least that's what I'm guessing. And I just can't help but wonder how he does it. Now a conversation with the concert man himself, Bill Brownlee. And Bill, welcome back. So good to have you here.
Glad to be here.
How many concerts a year do you attend?
Steve, for years, I tried to hit a total number of artists' performance seen at 365. I'm going to fall a little short this year. It's going to be more like 300, which means
God, that's just phenomenal.
You know, 175 to 225 individual concerts.
So you're out seeing a concert almost every other night of the week. Do I have that right?
Yes, very often. Last week, I hit a 2019 low, I only went out twice.
Is that right? Because no music was in town, or you had other things going on?
There were holidays, and yeah, life got in the way.
Yeah. Hey, how does your family, how do you arrange this with your family being out so much?
They're the ones pushing me out the door, Steve. You know, I think I'm, you know, I like to think I'm a nice guy, but I can be a lot to handle for hours on end. My wife of 31 years frequently pushes me out the door.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm guessing that you developed a set of standards for what makes for a good concert, Bill. Give us a sense. What does it take in your view?
Well, the reason I like to go out, in addition to being just, you know, an enormous lifelong music fan, is I want to feel something. I want to be moved, whether it's, you know, tears down my face or electronic dance music, bass, just, you know, massaging my body, or at a metal show, getting pushed around by people half my age. I want that visceral, you know, sense that I'm alive.
How many times a year do you have tears rolling down your cheeks because of something you're hearing?
Oh, I'm a crier.
Are you?
Yeah, so that happens maybe 25 times a year.
No kidding. And it's a moment when it does, right?
Yeah, and usually, I mean, that's not going to happen at a metal show unless I'm crying tears of pain.
Yeah.
But when an R&B or a jazz artist sings a ballad that moves me, or if it's someone like Marilyn May, for instance, you know, that's guaranteed tears.
Because she just remains such a phenom in her own right, right?
Well, when someone like her, who's an amazing vocalist, is singing a song about nearing the end of life, and it's just, you know, I'm at the point in my life where I can relate to that.
And she's close to 90 herself, right? I mean,
that's right.
Something like that, yeah. Can you tell now when a group or a performer is on it for the evening or having an especially bad night? Do you have a sense of that watching these people as closely as you do?
Yeah, sometimes it's immediately apparent, if the artist just isn't really present in the moment. But more important than that, I think, Steve, is the reaction of the audience. You know, to me, that's one of the main determinants of what I consider a good or bad show. If a room is full of people who are giving that performer, positive energy and feedback, that can make all the difference.
And change a bad night for a performer into a good night, I assume.
Certainly. And, you know, if I'm at a big concert and there's, let's say it's a boy band and there's a, 9-year-old girl next to me screaming and crying the whole time, that rubs off on me. I feed off, that child's energy. And that definitely plays an enormous factor into my take of that performance.
I'm visiting with music critic Bill Brownlee. You know, one of the things I admire so much about you, Bill, is that your musical tastes are so eclectic. You know, I'm not aware, having talked to you for as many years as I have, about one genre of music that you simply shake your head and say, no way. Now, maybe I'm missing something here, but you really are democratic when it comes to what you listen to.
Yeah, for certain. I don't understand my peers who tend not to expand their ears as they age. With me, I'm always interested in learning new things and hearing more. When I was maybe 21, I couldn't have imagined myself enjoying opera, but I do now.
Huh. How long ago did that develop?
It's the last 10 years I've started become far more interested in classical music and opera.
It's interesting because for most people, I think they go the opposite way as they get older. They sort of eliminate genres that they don't want to spend much time with.
Yes, it's true, and I'm perplexed by that. I try also, Steve, to continually surround myself with people much younger than I am, so I can learn from them much more than, people my own age. So if I can find an 18-year-old music fan, I'm going to, grill them, several times a year about, what they're interested in and why.
You talk them up even at concerts? You'll lean over and say, hey, what are you liking about this?
Well, not during the performance, but I try to chat with my neighbors at every show to get a sense of why they're there.
You know, I'm wondering, with all the music you hear, at what point does going to hear a concert, see a concert, become routine? Because for most people, when they go out to a show, it's a big night. It's a special occasion. And for you, it's not a special occasion. It's something you do repeatedly.
Yeah, you're right. And when if you buy a $100 ticket to see, let's say, Elton John, you've made that investment. And if I'm going as a critic, I didn't pay to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And
because the newspaper will pay for your way.
Right. And so it is different. But that's a tough one. I want, I'm just thinking about Elton John. So I've seen Elton John several times. And so it doesn't mean as much. And as much as I love Elton, and I've, listened to Elton John as a child, of course, and as in the 1970s when he was having all those hits, But at a concert in 2019, and I did review his Sprint Center concert in 2019. He's coming back in 2020.
Right.
I know what it's going to be. It's going to be a rote performance of his hits. Mm-hmm. And I love those songs. But yeah, I am probably not going to enjoy that as much as the 15,000 other people in the arena.
That's interesting. For someone like that, those veteran concert acts that are touring year after year, there is a certain routineness that sneaks into those shows, you think?
Right. I value surprise.
Yeah.
And at a classic rock show or a classic R&B show, there's not going to be as much of that.
Yeah.
Because there's no in a big stage production, there's videos and lighting that has to be synchronized. So the performers generally don't have a chance to, you know, play off the moment. They're stuck in what they can do.
Where do you like to go hear music in town? Where's your venue of choice?
Well, I go to, you know, tiny jazz clubs, and I go to the Sprint Center or Arrowhead Stadium. There's not one place I prefer more than the other. If it's a big arena show, I want the drones flying around and the lasers and the, you know, the cool effects. That can be just as good as making eye contact with a performer in a small club.
Yeah. If the quality of the sound is really important to someone who's listening to this, where's the best place in town to go hear music? Is it Kauffman Center?
It can be.
you didn't jump on that immediately.
No, it's well, you've got two rooms at the Kauffman Center. The at an acoustic show, let's say the Kansas City Symphony, Helsburg Hall is fantastic. That's going to be good. When vocals and amplification come into play, Helsburg Hall can be a little bit dicey.
Huh.
The bigger theater there,
the Kauffman Theater,
the Muriel Kauffman Theater tends, you know, it can be fantastic. It was really good for Snarky Puppy this year, for instance, but vocalists can sound a little dry. I'm not always a fan of the sound there.
That's interesting. So where do you like to go? Where's a guaranteed good sound going to be?
Well, for perfect audio, it's an unamplified show at the Folly Theater is pretty
great.
If it's an opera singer or a pianist, that can be really good, especially down front in the balcony. But sometimes, Steve, you know, one of my favorite shows of the year was at the Riot Room, where it's all about volume.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a local feedback guitar band called Double Drag just play as loudly as they could and try to hurt everyone's ears as much as they could about a week ago. And I loved it. It was just that wall of sound felt really good. That's exactly what I needed at that moment.
Now people think of a music critic and they might think that Bill Brownlee gets to hang out backstage with Elton John before a show because you're the music critic. You're writing for it, about it for the Star or talking about it here on KCUR. Is that the case?
That's often an option, but
is it an option you can give?
I mean, Elton John's a bit extreme, but yeah, but I never try to do that because I'm a critic.
Mm-hmm.
I am not trying to make friends with the artists. In fact, you know, I'm semi-notorious for writing negative reviews. No, I try to avoid contact with performers as much as I can. I don't want to be their friend.
Yeah.
You know, and if I'd prefer, you know, writing rave reviews to negative reviews, but no, hanging out with the people I write about isn't at the top of my list.
Bill Brownlee is my guest. He goes to more concerts in Kansas City every year than I think anybody in town. We asked you to come up with some picks of the most memorable performances that you've witnessed here in town. I wanted to go to some of those now. Your first one is Kanye West, and you saw him at the Sprint Center in 2013. Why did that performance stick out so much, Bill?
That's exactly when Kanye started becoming erratic. He'd put out this noise album called Yeezus. He'd just married Kim Kardashian. He'd lost his core audience. So I show up at the Sprint Center, and it's almost empty.
Hmm.
And yet in the middle of the arena is a mountain, you know, like a a big hill. And as the concert progressed, there were creatures climbing around the mountain. There was several dozen models walking around the stage. It was nuts. It still feels to this day like a dream. And that's the spectacle I measure everything else against to this day.
Let's listen to Kanye West here. I think he performed this at that concert. This is Black Skinhead from the 2013 album Yeezus. That's Kanye West, one of Bill Brownlee's picks for some of the most memorable performances he's seen in Kansas City. Let's go to another one here, a group I'm not familiar with, Bill, Godsmack.
Yeah, I chose this because to illustrate that life as a music critic isn't always glamorous. I like to joke with my former associate, Tim Finn, that the reason he brought me into the Starfold originally was so he wouldn't have to review Rockfest, the annual heavy metal and hard rock festival that was once at Liberty Memorial there at Penn Valley Park.
Right.
One year, it was 2010, I was reviewing the show. It was my birthday. It started raining. It didn't let up. I was cold. I was wet. There were one or two bands at that night that I actually liked. And well before this, I'd always gone to Rockfest. That's just the kind of thing a guy like me does.
Yeah.
But I thought, as I was cold and wet with hours to go at this festival, I thought, why am I doing this? What series of bad choices led me to this moment? The headliner was this group called Godsmack, and they're definitely not one of my favorite acts.
Let's listen to a little bit of Godsmack. This is from the 2010 album, The Oracle. It's Love, Hate, Sex, Pain. Let's continue our tour of the most memorable shows that Bill Brownlee's seen in town. And what's amazing to me is just how eclectic you are. Your next pick here is Eric Church.
Yeah.
The country star. Yeah.
I selected this show because it was one of the first I reviewed for the Star. And I was sent out to Independence for Santa Caligan Days. And there was this young, aspiring country artist named Eric Church playing. He was unknown at the time, and you know, I thought, man, this guy's songs are good. He looks good. I think this guy could be something. And sure enough, sells out Sprint Center whenever he comes to town.
So you think he's still something special?
Yeah, he's kind of bought into what people like me have said about him, you know, to his own detriment a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's definitely one of the stronger country artists working today.
This is Eric Church, the song How About You from the 2006 album Sinners Like Me.
I know I don't need baggy clothes or rings in my nose to be cool. The scars on my knuckles match the scuffs on these cowboy boots. And there's a whole lot more like me. How about you? I punch the clock trying to make it to the top. How about you? I ain't got no blue blood trust fund I can dip into.
That's Eric Church. Now, before I get to your last pick, I wanted to ask you, how healthy do you think the Kansas City music scene is right now, Bill? Because, again, on a macro level, it strikes me that on almost any given night of the week, there's not just one or two acts in town, but a bunch, and there's always a great choice out there.
For certain. There are plenty of venues, whether it's the jazz clubs that, you know, like, you know, Green Lady that are open every night, to the, you know, the big touring shows. And Kansas City gets most of the mainstream big shows that tour North America.
Do we often miss any, or are we pretty consistently included?
Well, anything that's experimental or left of center typically bypasses Kansas City. And that's why, you know, two or three times a year I go see festivals elsewhere to catch those artists that aren't going to come to Kansas City. But yeah, attendance overall is extremely healthy. People love going to see music.
How about the jazz scene? How healthy is it?
For mainstream swing fans, Kansas City is nirvana. I'd put Kansas City up against any city in the world, whether it's Tokyo or New York, if for pure mainstream straight-ahead jazz. For experimental sounds, not so much.
Let's go to your final pick for most memorable show you've seen in town. Your last pick here, Making Movies. You saw them in 2009 at the Beaumont Club.
Right. I saw them open for a Columbia band, a band from Columbia, right after they started. And again, I thought, boy, these kids are good. And yes, sure enough, Making Movies has made significant moves in the last decade. And, you know, that's the kind of band that, you know, as a Kansas City-based music fan, I love seeing succeed.
Let's listen to Making Movies, the track Terra Firma. I think one of the tricks for a lot of folks, myself included, is that in this streaming age, there are so many choices out there, to things to listen to. Trying to select stuff, it's overwhelming.
It's unlimited, but that's my dream. You know, I waited my entire life for this moment when every kind of music or every piece of music that's ever been made is available with the tap of a button.
And that's where we are.
That's where we are.
That's Bill Brownlee, a music critic, music writer for KCUR and for the Kansas City Star. Bill, thanks for the good interview. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Tomorrow on the show, Master Sommelier Doug Frost and I took some special KCUR friends to lunch last week at Room 39 in Kansas City. You can hear what happened on Up to Date tomorrow. You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to like KCUR on Facebook. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Jamie Hobbs. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.